other than the account of the crucifixion that we find in the gospel, our reading today is, without a doubt, the darkest point in Luke's gospel. Here, as we read, the story hits bottom. Jesus is abandoned by those closest to him. He is betrayed, arrested, denied, and beaten. All of this occurs within a span of just a few hours. And I say it's the darkest for two reasons. One, it's literally dark. This happens, this story takes place at night, outside. And the second and larger reason that it is a dark story is that everyone around Jesus in this story fails him. At no other moment in his journey is Jesus so alone as he is here. The reading begins immediately after Jesus and the disciples have celebrated the Passover meal in Jerusalem. At that meal, Jesus took the bread and he said over it, "This is my body, which is given for you." And then he took the cup of wine and said, "This cup that is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood." When the meal was over, Jesus and the disciples, they head back out to the Mount of Olives. And it is here, apparently, that he was staying. We read earlier in Luke, every day he was teaching in the temple, and at night he would go out and spend the night on the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives is a hill just outside the city walls of Jerusalem. It's about a half mile walk. I imagine that Jesus and the others were essentially camping there on the side of the hill, out under the stars. Because remember, they're just visitors to Jerusalem. They don't live there. They don't have a place to stay there. And with the Passover festival going on, probably wasn't any room anyway. So, after their evening meal, the Passover meal in Jerusalem, they walk back to the Mount of Olives. And when they get there, Jesus stops the group and instructs them to pray. He says, "Pray that you may not come into the time of trial." He then removes himself a bit further and kneels down and prays to God, saying, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet my will, not my will, but yours be done." When he's finished praying off by himself, he returns to the disciples, but he finds them sleeping. Jesus had asked his disciples to pray, but they dozed off. He wakes them and asks, "Why are you sleeping?" And again tells them to pray that you may not come into the time of trial. His disciples had failed him. They had fallen asleep, and the night gets darker. It is at this time that a crowd approaches them coming from Jerusalem. This group of priests and slaves and temple police and others is led by Judas, one of the 12. And you will recall that Judas, for reasons unknown to us, other than he was influenced by Satan, arranged with the chief priest to betray Jesus. What Judas was able to do for the chief priest is to physically lead them to Jesus when he is alone. They couldn't grab him during the day when he was in the temple because he was always in the temple, surrounded by the crowds, and arresting him there would have been unpopular and might possibly have even started a riot. But Judas could lead them to Jesus at night when the crowds are not around. Judas knew the location of the campsite. Judas could identify Jesus in the dark even. He knew him that well. I mean, remember, they didn't have photographs back then. You couldn't say, "Have you seen this guy?" Or, "Hold up, that looks like him." They didn't have identification the police could demand. No, they needed somebody like Judas to make a proper identification of Jesus. They certainly didn't want to arrest the wrong guy in the middle of the night. So Judas leads the crowd through the dark up the Mount of Olives in and says, "That's him." In our night, it gets a little darker. Now, immediately upon arrival of this crowd, the situation becomes tense, and one of the disciples has what we might call an itchy trigger finger. And he raises his sword and slices off the right ear of a slave of the high priest. Jesus sees this and shouts, "No more of this." And he touches the ear of the slave and heals him. Then Jesus turns to the crowd and he asks why they've come after him now, as if he were some common bandit. And he points out that he's been in the temple every day. Why didn't they just take him there? Well, we know the answer to that, because the crowds would have objected. It would have been a mistake politically for the chief priest to arrest Jesus publicly. Jesus says to the chief priest and the others, "This is your hour and the power of darkness." Yes, they have come under the protection of night, under the power of darkness, to commit a dark deed. And the night gets a little darker. The temple police then seize Jesus and take him back to the home of the high priest. Peter follows them, but stays back far enough so as not to be noticed. And once having delivered Jesus to the courtyard and restrained him, the crowd then builds a fire in the middle of the courtyard and they sit around it. They're waiting to see what's going to happen with Jesus. Peter is there. He's drawn to the fire. It's dark enough that he probably figures he won't be recognized. But he's wrong. A servant girl sees him. She stares at him and then announces, "This man was also with him." Peter, of course, denies this, saying, "Woman, I do not know him at all." And then someone else looks at Peter and says, "You're one of them, aren't you?" But Peter shakes him off as well. An hour goes by, and a third one says, "Surely this man was with him, for he's a Galilean." And presumably in that hour around the fire, Peter has spoken, and the others recognized his Galilean accent and put two and two together. And to this, Peter shouts, "Man, I do not know what you are talking about." And as he said those words, the rooster crowed, and Jesus looks over at Peter, and Peter recalls the words that had been spoken just a few hours earlier when they were all gathered around the table, and yet it seems like it was years ago. "Before the cock crows today, you will deny me three times." Peter remembers these words, and he leaves the courtyard, weeping at how, yes, he had indeed denied Jesus. And the night gets a little bit darker. And then finally, there are those who are restraining Jesus in the courtyard, and they begin to mock him and to beat him. They put a blindfold over his eyes and they hit him and they say, "Prophesy for us. Who is it that just smacked you now? Tell us. Don't you know?" And the darkness is complete. Up until that point where he was physically restrained, Jesus could have escaped this fate. He could have slipped out into the darkness, just crossed over the crest of that hill, and disappeared from Jerusalem forever. He did not have to die. But Jesus had a journey. He had a mission. He knows how this is going to play out. He's told his disciples what's going to happen. But he continues on. He is the Son of Man. And just as the Passover lamb was sacrificed so that its blood could be painted on the doors of the Hebrews' homes and protect them from the angel of death back in Egypt, so Jesus knows he too must be sacrificed so that the world might find freedom from its sin. Jesus continues on through the events of this dark night because he's strong, because he has been praying. Think back through our journey through Luke's gospel at the many times that Jesus has prayed. Back at the beginning, when he was in Galilee and the crowds became too large and too demanding, Jesus frequently would withdraw to a quiet place where he could pray. And before choosing the 12 to be his disciples, he spent the entire night in prayer. And then there was that time that he took Peter and James and John, and they went up the mountainside to pray, and they ended up meeting Moses and Elijah. Jesus told parables about prayer. He prayed for Peter. He prayed for all the disciples. And when Jesus prayed, what direction did his prayers take? Well, as we see in today's reading, he prayed that God's will would be accomplished no matter what the cost. He prayed, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet, not my will, but yours be done." As a theologian, Fred Craddock, put it so perfectly, from the day of his baptism, Jesus has, through prayer, lived in the will of God. Every day of Jesus' life was sought to fulfill the will of God, the will of God which he knew from prayer. Prayer is crucial in Jesus' life. And by prayer, we don't mean grand public professions like that Pharisee in the parable that he told, who stood at the front of the temple and prayed out loud for all to hear so all the world would know what a good, righteous man he was. No. Prayer is conversation with God. It is listening to God. It is meditating. It is thinking. It is reflecting on God's holy word. And prayer is a discipline. It's an exercise that makes one stronger the more they pray. As we see on the Mount of Olives, prayer prepares one for the times of darkness. On this dark night, when everything was against him, Jesus didn't run. He didn't panic. He could have. Who wouldn't? He continued on, bolstered by his prayer. As the night got darker and darker, Jesus continued his path. Luke tells us that in his anguish, Jesus prayed even more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. Now, this may sound a bit repulsive to us, blood, sweat like blood, but it's not. It's actually an athletic metaphor, because Jesus is like a sprinter waiting at the start. He has trained. He's warmed up. He's ready for the race. The sweat is the sweat of preparation. This is Olympic-level competition. So when Judas appears with that crowd and Jesus is arrested and beaten and denied and forgotten, he is able to continue on because he is the lamb going to slaughter. He is prepared. I have no doubt that Luke used this passage not just to teach about Jesus to his congregation, but to teach his congregation about what it means to be a disciple, what it means to be a follower of Jesus, that one can expect to suffer, to sacrifice, even to die. And this was not outside the realm of possibility for Luke's people. They saw it around them. Those who had given their lives to following Christ, to proclaiming Jesus' name and message. It's not about our will, but it is about God's will. To be a follower of Christ is to follow God's will. It is our prayer, that prayer that we say every week, that God's kingdom will come. Now, when we pray, we might want to pray for good things in life, for happiness and success, that we will be kept safe in all that we do. But nowhere is this Jesus' prayers for himself or for us. Jesus prays that God's will be done. We may have to be that cup. His prayer for us is for daily nourishment, that we should be forgiving, that we are not brought to the time of trial. And by this, he means that we will follow God's will. It's because it's when we divert from God's path that we will be tried. And this is not a prayer that is to be said and forgotten. Prayer is a discipline, a daily continual task. It's an exercise, a regimen. And when we are strong in prayer, we can better endure the dark times that will arise. This might be the death of a loved one, an illness, a financial setback, a storm ravaging our nation. But Jesus isn't talking about our personal lives. To be a disciple is to be able to move through these tough times, to not step back, to not run over the hill and go, this isn't for me. To be a disciple is to have the strength day after day to do God's will, to give of ourselves, to sacrifice when needed. That is what Luke is teaching his congregation. This is how you are to be a disciple of Christ. To pray, to be strong, to give. And that is what we are called to do as well. We may not see the sacrifices that they did, but they are there, especially when we are disciples.